Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Welcome back, guys, to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. And I'm particularly excited to talk about dating and weight gain, or just weight gain and just weight in general. And what clued me into wanting to talk about this topic was listening to one of my favorite podcasts called Dr. Stryker's Insider Information and the Menopause Podcast. I'm not menopausal, but she's got so much great information on her podcast that I thought, let's bring Dr. Stryker on to the podcast to talk about weight, because everybody that I work with, to some way, shape, or form, we all have little insecurities with regards to our weight. It could be 5 pounds, it could be 50 pounds, it could be 150 pounds. I've seen everything in my practice over the last 13 years. So I am extremely excited to have Dr. Stryker, who I am good friends with. So I call her Lauren. She's a gynecologist, a professor at Northwestern University. She's the author of multiple books about women's health, which are amazing, and the host of her podcast that I just talked to you about. So welcome, Lauren. I am so happy to talk to you about weight, my favorite, unfavorite topic.
Everybody's favorite topic. It's like not, but it's an important topic because you're right. People obsess about it. They worry about it. And when they come to our clinic, it is absolutely in the top three of things that women want to talk about when they get there.
It's amazing. When people sign up for coaching at Smart Dating Academy, one of the first things we do for them is a photo shoot. And literally, I'm not exaggerating, if 50% of people that come in, they're like, well, I'd really like to lose blah, blah, blah pounds. Should I work on that? And I said, you know what? With certain numbers, the camera is not going to pick that up. And if there's way more to lose, who cares? Do your photo shoot now because you're beautiful. And if you do get to your goal weight, treat yourself to another shoot. So we talk about weight, right? You think about dating and relationships, right? And we think about it's just this one pie piece, but health and wellness and weight has a direct impact on how we feel about ourselves, wouldn't you say?
Women are self-critical. They always have been. And certainly when you think in terms of dating, there's two things at play here that people worry about specifically with weight. Number one is, are they going to get the guy? You know, or the, you know, the partner, is that person even going to be interested in them if they don't have the perfect body? And then number two is, at some point, if things go well, they're going to have to take their clothes off. And for a lot of women, particularly if they have not been sexual for a long time, it's bad enough to think about how all of that's going to go. But then on top of that, when you put, gee, here I am, you know, I'm not 20 anymore. Time has not been good to my hips and my thighs. And now I have to take it all off in front of the new guy that I actually like. So yes, it is a big issue.
It's a big issue. And I'll tell you what, to that point, we work with men and women, and men that work with us can be just as self-conscious about their weight. We recently started working with a gentleman that dropped 100 pounds and was so proud of his progress. And he looks amazing in his photo shoot. So, but I can see that it is, you know, it's all of us at a certain point. And absolutely, whether you're 22 or you're 82 listening to this, we all tend to magnify our flaws, and weight, like Lauren said, tends to be in the top three. And I would wholeheartedly concur that that's what we see in our practice as well. So Lauren, tell us a little bit about your own, you know, people always assumed you grew up the skinny kid, and you tell a great story in your podcast about this and how it affected you.
I always wanted to be the skinny kid because actually my passion was ballet. And when we talk about kids who want to be thin, we're talking about the kids who are into gymnastics and dance. And I was that kid, but I was a normal weight kid. I always was, but I went through an early puberty. I was actually 10. And the minute I went through puberty, all of a sudden I had hips, and I mean hips. And I thought, whoa, I can't just eat whatever I want. So I started to be very careful, and I was always careful. And then I also had a, you know, kind of a bad family history. My father and a lot of relatives in my family had very early heart disease. So as time went on, my efforts to maintain a normal body weight were because, yes, I was a dancer, and people always said, does ballet help you lose weight? And I said, absolutely. Every single week I put on a leotard and get in front of a mirror, and that makes me lose weight. It wasn't the actual dancing. It was the leotard, the being in front of the mirror, the having being surrounded by other skinny girls and having ballet teachers that, quite frankly, gave me a very hard time if there was an ounce of extra fat. So in that sense, it wasn't the healthiest approach, but I was very much aware. But yeah, I've spent a lifetime of being very, very careful about what I eat. And as I talked about in my podcast, my father had his first heart attack in his 40s, as many others in my family have. And he subsequently died very young at 63 of heart disease. So for me, it wasn't, yes, vanity, no question. There's a big piece of me that's vain, that wants
the leotard,
nice, the leotard, the whole thing. But as I got older and wasn't dancing anymore, I love clothes. I wanted to look nice. But it also became a medical necessity for me to keep my weight down. And I cannot tell you how many patients, when I talk to them about weight, and they'll look at me and say, yeah, well, you know, you never had to worry about weight because I'm a normal weight. And when I say to them, it's just not true. I've spent a lifetime. I know exactly what I eat every day. I am always conscious of it. I love food. I enjoy food. I eat a lot of food. I cook all the time. I entertain all the time. So it's not that food isn't a big part of my life. I'm just very mindful in terms of what I eat, portions, and activities to offset all the blue cheese that I really love.
I love that. And, you know, people a lot of times make the same assumptions about me. Well, you've never had to worry about your weight. I'm like, I've worried about my weight since I was 9 years old. You know, yeah. My dad, when I was 9, said to me, I'll give you $10 for every pound you lose, right? In third grade. And I was never fat. When I look back at pictures, I look at, and it's like, wow. So you start to wonder where we start to have
issues. You never
issues.
Told me that. Did it work? Did you make a lot of money?
I made no money. I tried it for 2 days, and I, you know, would do some TV workout shows back in the 80s and, you know, try to eat 2 apples a day, and it clearly didn't work. So weight has also always been a thing for me since I was a kid, and very similar to your family history. We have tremendous history of heart disease in our family, stroke. My grandmother died of heart disease. My dad's sister died of heart disease. His heart is scotch taped together with 6 stents, a quadruple bypass, and a pacemaker. So I take health and wellness very seriously because I know I was not gifted the genetic lottery in any way, shape, or form.
But, you know, I think it's also important that, you know, certainly you and I, we are concerned about our family history. But family history aside, heart disease is the number one killer of women, period. And women worry so much about breast cancer and other medical illnesses, when in fact, heart disease is what people should be laser focused on. And we look at risk factors for heart disease. And certainly, you know, weight is one of those factors. So on one hand, we say, okay, don't obsess about your weight. And I'm in agreement with that. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be, you know, this rod thin.
We're not wearing leotards looking in the mirror anymore.
No,
thank goodness.
No. And, you know, certainly as you get up there into the 40s and 50s, that extra 5-10 pounds, it's going to happen, which is why Spanx was invented, of course. But you also have to be realistic that it's not okay to be 50, 60, 70 pounds overweight, because we hear all the time when people say, well, I'm overweight, but my numbers are good. I'm healthy. And they're kidding themselves, because their numbers might be good right now at that moment in time. And someone can be 50 or 60 pounds overweight, and they might be fit because they work out a lot and their numbers are good. But statistically, the reality is that when you look at the impact of weight on not only cardiovascular disease, but diabetes and cancer.
Yeah.
You know, when we look at the different cancers, uterine cancer, breast cancer, those are very much tied to excess weight, no matter how fit you are, no matter how good your numbers are. So, you know, I think we need to have a really good perspective that the idea is not to be skinny, skinny. The idea is to be healthy. The idea is to eat in a healthy way. But we also have to maintain a healthy weight and just, you know, not let things get out of control if we want to live our best life and our longest life.
Absolutely. And tell us, you know, just to, because I think this is so fun, you did a fun survey on this. So ladies, this is for you, about what men's biggest turn-offs and turn-ons are.
So this was part of a bigger survey. There were actually about 30 or 40 questions, my biggest bedroom deal breaker survey. And I surveyed hundreds of men about what their biggest bedroom deal breakers were. And then I surveyed women as well. And we can talk about some of those. It's kind of fun. But one of the things that I asked, they were all multiple choice. And one of the questions was, you know, are any of these bedroom deal breakers? And it was things like, you know, saggy breasts, lumpy thighs, you know, big butt. And one of the choices was, none of those are deal breakers. I'm just happy to be invited to the party. And that was the number one response. And I didn't expect that. You know, I thought that these guys on an anonymous survey, totally anonymous,
would
say what they were really thinking. Well, you know, okay, let's be honest here. When I see those ripply thighs, it's a big turnoff. Not at all. Not at all. And when I looked at the whole survey to say, okay, what is your biggest bedroom turnoff? You want to, Bella, you want to guess what the biggest bedroom turnoff was? It surprised me.
I'm trying to think of what it might be. I mean, something we said, do we make them not feel attractive?
The number one biggest bedroom turnoff was hygiene. Hygiene. So
hygiene.
Hygiene.
Like,
brush your teeth,
showered?
Take a shower. Yes. Yes. You know, men, if it was an overwhelming response that she's got to be clean. So all this effort that's put into your hair and what kind of eyeshadow and are you going to pluck your eyebrows? Just take a shower, evidently. The number two biggest turnoff was women who during sex, remember this survey was about biggest bedroom turnoff, so it was about sex. It was about sex. This number two biggest bedroom turnoff was women who were not responsive. Meaning, if he's trying really hard, or in his version of trying really hard, to do something that he thinks is going to be pleasurable, silence is not the appropriate response. They either want to hear oohs and ahs, or quite frankly, they want some communication. You know, nope, you're a little too high. Move down an inch. You know, move to the left. Need you to be there, not there. You know, that's what they want women to participate. That's really what it comes down to. So take a shower and participate, and you are off to a great start, even if you don't have a perfect body.
I love that so much, because we body shame ourselves. Look, Lauren said she did it to herself since she was a kid. I've done it with myself from the time I was a kid until today, right? We all do it. But surveying the opposite gender says they just want to be invited to your
the party.
Not
to mention, this is what candlelight is for. Everybody looks more attractive. You think he's so perfect? Look at his body. It's not like he's got a six pack and, you know, everything is perfect. So yes, it's the idea of set the lighting, set the mood, nice music, scented candle. All of those things are just going to make everyone feel more confident and more attractive.
I love that.
Get shower together even, you know, I'm just saying.
Just saying. So, okay. And I know this is not about weight, but I got to know if those were men's biggest turnoffs and turn-ons, just give us a few from women about men.
Oh boy. A lot of them are hygiene related. Toenails.
Shower, people.
Yeah. Well, cut your toenails too, evidently. Women tend to get pedicures. Men do not. And something about those yellow, gnarly toenails is just as a big problem. Teeth, yellow teeth, not good. And this one, oh God, I hope people don't turn off this podcast when I say this one, but streaks on his tidy whities.
What?
I know. What? I can't make this stuff up. These were write-ins. Streaks on his tidy whities was a definite bedroom turnoff for the ladies.
Mama didn't teach you how to wipe?
Evidently.
Oh, dear Lord. Okay.
I know. You asked. So
okay, I did. So a lot of this, nobody said pot bellies. Nobody said thighs. No. Nobody said cellulite. Nobody said, you know, my double chin. So, okay, that's all great. So if you're sitting there shaming yourself going, I need to lose this much weight, just exhale, because there is a lid to your cute little pot that is out there exactly as you are. So now let's talk a little bit about weight gain. And what I found interested, Lauren, is tell us about what you realized about metabolism throughout life.
So as a physician, of course, I've been talking to women about this for decades. And one of the mantras always has been, well, you know, when you get to hit your 40s, metabolism slows down. So if you eat the same and you exercise the same, you're going to gain weight. That's just the way it is. And then a study came out last year that completely turned that thinking upside down, because this was a really good study, a well-done study of an enormous number of people tracked over a long period of time. And what they found is, in fact, metabolism doesn't slow down in the 40s. It actually stays pretty steady from age 20 to 60. And then at 60 is when metabolism starts to slow, but not that much. Not that much, just by about, you know, less than 1% a year. So the reason that people gain weight midlife particularly, which is the group that I'm focused on, isn't because of slow metabolism. There's a lot of other factors. And the other statistic, of course, that I cite all the time is that women are twice as likely to gain weight as men. So when we talk about why people gain weight, and it's a lot of lifestyle stuff, I mean, face it, the kids are finally out of the house, you're going out to eat, you're having wine every night with dinner, you're not exercising, and we all know the reasons. But men and women both have those same lifestyle changes, yet it's the women that tend to gain more weight.
Why, Lauren? Why? Yeah,
well, there's a couple of reasons. First of all, and you know, again, I'm focusing more on perimenopausal women and menopausal women, but that happens a lot earlier than people think. A lot of women who are in their 40s and they're starting to put on some weight, and it never occurs to them that it may be perimenopause, because in their heads, perimenopause and menopause is grandma. It's, you know, 55, 60, 65. And in fact, any time of 40, after 40 is normal. And it's very typical for women in her early or mid 40s to start to go through some of these perimenopausal changes. And what happens, it's actually not the lack of estrogen that causes the weight gain directly. It's indirectly, because as your estrogen levels start to fluctuate, you don't get a decent night's sleep. And we know that that's absolutely correlated with weight gain, and we can talk about why. And we also know that a lot of women start to have hot flashes, and hot flashes also correlate with weight gain because of that surge in cortisol that you get. So when you really do the deep dive into weight gain midlife, yes, lifestyle, yes, food choices. But if I could fix one thing that would help everyone lose weight, it would be getting a good night's sleep. Because if you don't get at least 7 hours of good sleep, that means that your hunger hormones, I don't know if you're familiar with leptin and ghrelins, but these are the hunger hormones. And this is of any age. If your leptins and ghrelins are not in the right range, you are going to eat not only too much, but you're going to eat the bad stuff. You're going to eat the carbs. You're going to go for the veggies. You're not going to go for the veggies. You're going to go for the pizza. You're going to go for the French fries. And So we have to look at why you're not sleeping, because this, again, is something we see in all ages. My podcast, actually, that just came out a couple of weeks ago was about sleep, and this is sleep throughout the ages, because even if you're not having hot flashes, sleep apnea, restless leg, stress, pain, all of those things can get in the way of a decent night's sleep. And I always tell people, losing weight's going to be a losing battle if you don't get a decent night's sleep. That's where we start. And then we start to look at other things.
Okay. And if this is resonating with you, you know, sleep is a big deal and you need the 7 hours, like she said. And if you are not sleeping well, maybe you go and see a sleep specialist. Absolutely. If you need to, or you fix the obvious things, right? You chill yourself out at night, turn off your phones, don't have screen time, don't talk to the people in your family that stress you out late at night, right?
Don't watch the scary movie right before you go to bed. Don't drink too much alcohol. You're going to wake up in the middle of the night. A lot of people do that. They go to the wine because it helps them sleep, right? And it will. It will help you fall asleep. But then you will find that you're waking up in the middle of the night. But, you know, you mentioned the cell phone, all of that. It goes far beyond the cell phone and the screen. There was a study that came out this year that said any ambient light, even if it's just a little sliver of light under the door, may keep you from getting that good, solid 7 hours of sleep. So I'm a big fan of sleep masks. I think instead of handing out sleeping pill prescriptions, we should be giving everyone a sleep mask, a really comfortable, good sleep mask, because that is going to make a difference for a lot of people. And I don't want to oversimplify. You know, give everyone a sleep mask and they're going to sleep. But those are first steps. You know, first you make sure that you are not doing anything to sabotage your sleep. And then if in spite of doing all the sleep hygiene sorts of things, you still can't sleep, yes, sleep specialists are the go-tos. Most major medical centers have sleep specialists. There are many medical conditions that people aren't even thinking about that can impact on their sleep. And there are solutions. You know, I always say in everything I do, I'm solution oriented. And it's not enough just to say that there's an issue. You have to come up with the solutions for that issue.
So that's great. With regards to the 7 or 8 hours, question asking for a friend, just kidding. I tend to be somewhat of a night owl. And I now, you know, as I am getting older, I try to be in bed by midnight, yeah, right? And so now, is that 7 to 8 hours? Is there an optimum time? Like, should I be thinking about doing 10 to 6 or 11 to 7 instead?
No, it doesn't matter whether you start at midnight or you start at 10, or quite frankly, if you start at 2 in the morning. What you want is restorative sleep, that good REM sleep. Okay. So ideally, you don't want to be up and down. You want it to be 7 hours in a row in a perfect world. And really the most important thing, quite frankly, to simplify this, if you wake up in the morning and you feel well rested, you're probably okay. It's the women that wake up in the morning and they feel like, oh my God, I have to take a nap soon. You know, how soon can I lie down again? And those are the women that are not getting good night's sleep. The other thing is, I think most people are familiar with sleep apnea, but when they think of sleep apnea, they think of people who are very overweight and who are snoring, which is true. That is one of the risks. Those are the risk factors. But thin people can also have sleep apnea, and people who don't snore can also have sleep apnea. And one of the things that seems to be specifically in women is if you wake up in the morning and you have a morning headache, you need to get screened for sleep apnea. Too many women are missed, and sleep apnea is treatable. And we know that when we talk about not getting enough sleep, yes, we're talking about weight and we're focusing about weight today, but the lack of sleep is associated with so many other medical conditions and serious conditions. So, you know, getting enough sleep is no small matter.
Okay, got it. And also you said sleep and hot flashes, and those can happen to you even in your 40s, right? And these are why women gain more weight than guys. But dudes, if you're listening to this and you're, you know, sweating up a storm in the middle of the night, maybe crack a window or turn on the AC.
That's right. I mean, anytime someone gets overheated, anytime someone has a hot flash, they are going to get that surge of cortisol. And once in a while, it's not going to make a difference. But we know that when it's chronically happening, when it's, you know, every night going on and on, it is going to have a big impact, not only on weight gain, but on a lot of other health conditions as well. You know, we know that it's associated with heart disease, for example, with women with bone loss, with cognitive function. You know, we talk about brain fog and all these other lovely perimenopausal things. And when someone comes into, I run a center for perimenopause and menopause at Northwestern, and when someone comes in and they have all these complaints, that is basically the first thing we say is, how are you sleeping? And they like look at us and say, sleep? Are you kidding? I never sleep. Well, that's the first thing we're going to address. We're going to try and find out why and correct that, because very often when we correct sleep, everything else falls into place. Cognition, mood, losing weight, libido. You know, there's nothing that's going to kill libido like not sleeping, because you see that pillow when you're not thinking about sex. All you're thinking is about, I hope, you know, he leaves me alone so I can get a decent night's sleep. Amen. So, you know, there's a very long list of things that are impacted by a lack of sleep.
Wow, that's amazing. And then if you don't sleep well, you're more likely to grab the pizza and have that third glass of wine the next day, right?
And not work out. You know, if you're exhausted and you're considering going to the gym or going for that long walk, no way.
I got it. So tell us about the different types of fat that exists. What's good?
Good fat and bad fat.
Or what's bad and what's with the damn muffin top? Okay.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about muffin top first. So muffin top is the redistribution of weight that happens when your estrogen levels fall. Now, earlier I'd said that estrogen, low estrogen, does not cause you to gain weight. However, low estrogen does cause a redistribution of the weight that you have. So even if you don't gain a pound, if you're in that lucky group that gains no weight when you go through perimenopause and menopause, there will be a redistribution of your weight so that you have more of that midsection weight. And that's where that muffin top is from. And then if you combine that with the fact that most women do gain an average of 5 pounds in the first year that they enter menopause, you are going to suddenly find that you cannot get your genes up where you could before. So you're not imagining it. It does happen. Some of it, I say there's got to be little acceptance here that your, you know, 40, 45-year-old body is just not going to be the same as your 20-year-old body. But having said that, certainly keeping it a healthy weight, exercising, women who choose to take hormone therapy. If you take estrogen, you're not going to get as much of that redistribution of weight. You're not going to get as much of that muffin top. But to get back to the good weight and bad weight, you know, from a medical perspective, and everyone has their definition of good weight and bad weight. For me, it's always been my, you know, tush weight. But medically speaking, the bad weight is belly fat and visceral fat. When visceral fat is the fat inside that you can't see, that's the fat that surrounds your organs, like your heart. And that is the fat that is most associated with medical problems like diabetes and metabolic syndrome and heart disease. And the women that have belly fat are the ones that have the predisposition to having visceral fat. Interestingly, if you carry your weight in your thighs and your butt, that actually seems to protect against diabetes. I don't know why, but it does. So it's the belly fat that's the problem fat, if you will.
Wow. And is there a way to know that you have visceral fat, or just look at your stomach? And if it's bulging out, you probably have some visceral fat.
You probably do. I mean, certainly there's different imaging that can be done, you know, MRIs and all that they can identify, but it's not the kind of thing that a woman is going to know just by looking in the mirror.
Wow. So we're hormonally challenged. If we sleep better, we'll certainly be able to take it off. Tell us about, you know, what are the tips to take off the weight and keep off the weight, whether it's for vanity, whether it's for health, whether it's some combination of both, like for most of us listening to this, give us like things that we can do today that can put us on a better trajectory. And I've got my notepad out, taking notes, wanting these tips.
It's actually pretty interesting because my podcast, my 12 tip podcast, which is 12 tips to take off weight, has been one of the most popular podcasts, up there with, how to have a better orgasm, just saying. But, you know, so my tips are basically about breaking patterns, because when you talk about food that you eat or don't eat, most of the women I work with are really smart. They know. They know that, yes, fruits and vegetables are generally better for you than a bag full of chocolate chip cookies. So people don't need to be told what food they should eat and shouldn't eat. It's really about breaking patterns. And it's not a lot different than breaking dating patterns, because I know very often what you are telling people is, okay, so what have you been doing for the last 10 years and how's that been working for you? And I basically have the same approach, because women will come in and say, I can't lose weight. And I've been trying, you know, for the last 10 years, and they can't seem to take it off. And so what I try and do is break the eating patterns, break the way we think about food and how we approach food. And so I give some very, very specific tips as an example,
you know, go there. Give us the specifics. So
it's interesting, because I don't know if you like buffets, if you go to buffets or if you go to restaurants that have buffets, but I used to be a waitress. That's how I worked my way through college and medical school. And I used to work in a seafood restaurant here in Chicago. And I noticed early on that at the beginning of the buffet is where they have all the inexpensive foods. Well, the inexpensive foods happen to also be the fattening foods, you know, things like pasta salad and tuna salad and potatoes au gratin and all that kind of stuff. And what I realized is what the restaurant was banking on is that people start at the beginning of the buffet and they work their way down. So they fill up their plates with all the fattening stuff. And then by the time they get to the end of the buffet, which has not only the healthy stuff, but the good stuff, the shrimp, the crab's legs, the oysters, their plates were full. So they might take one shrimp and think, oh, I'll come back for more, and then sit down and eat the whole plate full of tuna, you know,
macaroni.
Pasta surprise, macaroni. And then, you know, before you know it, they have eaten an insane number of calories. So tip one is scope out the whole buffet before you plan your attack. You know, go to the end of the buffet and say, okay, I am loading up on oysters and crab legs with this amazing spicy sauce. And then maybe I'll go back later and have some of that tuna salad, which why bother? You can make that at home. So that's tip number one is kind of, you know, and along the same lines, we all, when we get invited to someone's home, what do? We say, you know, what can I bring? What can I help with? What can I do? And I think that that's a lovely thing to do, of course, and you want to help out your hostess, but it's also a strategy to make sure that there's something that you want to eat there. Because if I go to someone's home, I will almost always say, how about if I bring a platter of grilled vegetables? Or how about I make a big salad? Because then I am guaranteed that there is going to be something for me to eat that I like, that's good, but is also going to be healthy. So that's another little tip.
That's a great idea. Bring what you want to eat.
Bring
what
you want to eat with you that's healthy. The other thing also is when we go out to eat, very often we order a bottle of wine. Why do we order a bottle of wine? Because it's less expensive. We feel like, okay, if you order by the glass, it's going to be, you know, whatever it is, a glass, and that the bottle, if you add up the glasses, is always going to be less expensive. But the reality is, if you order a bottle of wine, you're going to have a highly motivated waiter who's going to keep pouring. And your wine glass will never be empty. And those calories add up really, really fast. So even if it's a little bit more expensive, you're better off ordering the glass of wine, finish the glass of wine, have a glass of seltzer or something in between, and then order your second glass of wine. And I promise you, at the end of the night, you will have two glasses of wine instead of three, four, or five, which over a long period of time is a lot of calories. So again, it's all behavioral stuff. It's strategies. It's, you know, and then there's the one that you and I discovered together, You know, the whole idea of we all have this absolute go-to of, if you're going to get together with a friend, it's let's meet for lunch, let's meet for dinner, let's have a drink. And I think it was actually you that started me down the path of, let's just go for a walk, and because we live close to each other. And we started doing that. And it was like this big paradigm shift of, okay, this is actually better, because not only are we out here walking for 2 hours and we can really catch up, but at the end of that, we've had our exercise too. You know, we're skinnier. Active, and instead of just, you know, sitting and eating for 2 hours, which you will do. If you go to a restaurant, you will, you know, pick and eat and eat and eat long after you're full. So think in terms of activities with a friend. Go for the manicure, go for the walk, go shopping, anything that's not surrounding food.
Yeah, that's great. And I love what you said. And I think I heard this in your podcast, like, even so, your first drink, you know, your alcoholic drink goes down so easily,
so fast,
right? So fast, because you come in there and you're thirsty and maybe you're a little anxious, right? So instead, fill up a glass, ideally a pretty glass, a festive glass.
I use a wine glass with sparkling water.
Yeah. And drink that first before.
Splash of cranberry juice. Delicious.
In.
And the other tip, this one was not in my podcast, because I couldn't, you know, you can only go on so long. I have actually about 20 or 30 tips, but I only did my top 12. But another one is, isn't it interesting how your so-called friends always give you permission to cheat? Like, you'll go to someone's home and you're thinking, okay, I am not going to have that chocolate cake. And then the friend will say to you, how can you not have a piece of cake? It's my birthday. And then they guilt you into having the cake that you really didn't want. And the analogy I always use is, if you were allergic to shellfish and your friend tried to give you a piece of shrimp and you said, I'm sorry, I don't eat shrimp, I'm allergic to it, your friend would not say, but it's my birthday, have it anyway. You would, it just wouldn't happen. So why is it that we all feel so guilty about saying, no, thank you, I'm not going to have that? And that's, you know, our friends, you would think our friends would help us when we say, I'm not having cake right now, thank you, I'm just going to have the fruit. And They don't support that. They're like, no, come on, it's my birthday. Like, it gives them pleasure to have you eat the thing that you don't really want to eat. Do you understand that?
100%. And I feel this way even sometimes with my own family, because food is associated with love.
Love.
And so many cultures, right? And my mom is an amazing cook, and she will cook the best meal all the way to dessert at the end. And I feel like, and maybe this is like the recovering pleaser in my personality, that if I don't fill my plate up with food at least twice, it doesn't make her feel like her food was good enough.
Exactly. She feels like she didn't do her job. And, oh, Bella, does that mean you didn't like it?
It's, you didn't like it. Honey, I made all of your favorite things.
It's like, and I've been working for 3 days getting ready for you to come and eat your favorite things. And how can you not? Speaking of filling plates, the other tip that I talk about is, don't use the ginormous plate. You know, studies have shown that plates have gotten bigger in the United States. I always have to look at grandma's china, the plate, you go, wow, those plates were kind of small. No, those plates were normal size. Now we have these enormous platters and you fill them up. And I find that a smaller plate, you will take less food. Our eyes are always bigger than our stomach. And when you're filling a plate, you just think, it all looks so good and I'm going to fill it up. Take the smaller plate, fill your smaller plate, eat everything on the smaller plate. And then you wait a little bit. And if you're still hungry, you'll go back and you'll get some more. You know, I'm not a fan of starving. I'm not suggesting anyone should ever starve. There's no reason to ever be hungry. There really isn't. You know, we rarely eat because we're really hungry. We eat out of boredom. We eat because it tastes good, because we eat because socially we're someplace where everyone is eating. And one of the things about being a surgeon is, when I used to do surgeries that were very long, and any surgeon will tell you, you always eat before you go into the operating room because you don't know how long you're going to be there. But it wasn't unusual for me to go into the operating room at 7 in the morning and then not get out of the operating room until 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And people would say, don't you get hungry? And I was like, no, I didn't even think about it because I was so engaged, because I was so laser focused on what I was doing that I didn't have time to think about being hungry. And so often we eat because we don't particularly like what we're doing. We're looking to take a break. We're looking to do something different. So again, it's finding strategies, things to do. If you're feeling bored, if you're feeling like, oh, all I'm thinking about is what I'm going to eat, think about something else.
100%. And I think, Lauren, you and I have talked a little bit about this. I mean, in the last year, I made every mistake, cortisol, sleep, and over the course of 5 years, put on the dreaded 20 pounds. And on my little frame, I needed to take it off. And so doing that, what Lauren's saying is exactly right. Sometimes we eat for all of these other reasons. We eat because we're happy. We eat because we're sad. We eat because we're bored. We eat because we're angry, right? But we don't really eat because we're hungry. Yeah. But interestingly, even if we are hungry, when we're so engaged with our brains doing something else, how many of us haven't accidentally skipped a meal? Yeah. I do it all the time. Now I do it mindfully.
There's another situation in which people tend to not be hungry. And if you don't know the answer to this, I'm going to be very disappointed in you.
Having sex?
No, when they're in love. When they're in love.
It's true.
You think about the beginning of a relationship, when you are just completely obsessed with this person in your life and all you're thinking about is being with this person and having sex with this person. And it turns out that there's a biologic reason for that. It's in the brain. It's called the melanocortin system, which the melanocortin system has to do with libido. And in fact, one of the drugs that we give to enhance libido will stimulate the melanocortin system. But the other thing that happens with this drug, the side effect of this drug, is nausea and vomiting, because the melanocortin system also turns off hunger. And that's because the yin and yang of, if you're really in love and your libido is sky high, you are not thinking about food.
No, absolutely not. You've got adrenaline probably and all sorts of fun, yummy hormones raging through you, right? I remember in the beginnings of any new relationship, not thinking about food and always dropping pounds, because not only are you like, okay, I want to look good, you know, for when the lights go out,
but it doesn't last. That's the problem. Let's say you're in love and it works out, and then 6 months later, you're still in love, you're eating.
You're eating together, and you've got your feet up on the coffee table, and you're snacking while you're eating. But I was going to share one of the things as I went on this journey to lose weight this year with intermittent fasting was just don't snack, right? Yeah. And it becomes really so much easier. And I think that I got my mom onto this lately. She's like, I feel so much better, because she's like, breakfast snack, lunch snack, dinner snack. Like, we just graze all day long. And I told her, just try it.
The problem is that you can make a case for that eating small amounts through the day is healthy, but not having big meals and small amounts. That's
big
the
meals
problem.
And small
it's the
meals.
Big meals and small amounts. And one of the things about being a doctor, actually, that was helpful to me is you can't have food in patient care areas. So I've had a lifetime of not only being in the operating room or labor and delivery or in my office, where if you want food, you literally have to go to the break room to get it. You can't just have drawers of snacks in exam rooms, and you wouldn't want to, you know. But so there's not a lot of snacking that goes on during the day if you're working in a doctor's office, or there shouldn't be, because there shouldn't be any food in patient care areas.
Wow, that's amazing. So put your snacks way far away from you, like at the other side of the hospital, so you can't get to them, right?
Well, you know, but the other thing also is, as many studies have shown, that if you have someone keep a food diary when they are trying to lose weight, they will lose weight just because of the increased awareness of what they're eating. They're thinking about it. So I will tell someone, don't change anything. I just want you to keep a food diary for the next 2 weeks, that every single thing you put in your mouth, even if it is one potato chip, I want you to write it down on this log. And they have apps now, of course, where you can do that. And every single study has shown that if you're honest and you truly do write down every single thing you put in your mouth, you will be eating less within a, at the end of the week than at the beginning of the week, because it makes you think about it. It's the mindless eating. You start to say, do I really need to put this potato chip in my mouth? Am I really hungry? And if I put one potato chip in my life, in my mouth, you know that that's not going to be the last one. You know that you're going to follow that with, you know, a number of other potato chips. So part of it is being mindful is, and that's, when we look about noon, that popular diet. I mean, that's what it is. It's behavioral stuff. And the book that I recommend and the diet I recommend is Six Factors to Fit, which is by, an expert, Chicago expert, Bob Kushner. And yes, obviously talks about that you shouldn't be eating the fried foods and healthier foods, but it's also really about being mindful of these behaviors and these patterns. You don't have to have the donut with your coffee every morning.
You can just have the coffee.
And maybe some yogurt and fruit.
And have some eggs or something else.
Or something that is going to fill you up so that you're not, people, they skip breakfast. And then at 10:30, they are so hungry that they will eat something that is probably not what they really want to be eating.
So and
I'm a breakfast eater. I have coffee. I'm a big coffee drinker. But in the morning, I will have, some egg whites and vegetables. I'm very big on salsa. I pour hot sauce. I like spicy stuff. So I pour salsa all over everything because it's delicious and there's not a lot of calories, but the eggs will fill me up that I'm putting the salsa on. And I kind of alternate that with Greek yogurt and fresh fruit. And it's good. It's not, I'm not depriving myself. Like I said earlier, I like food. I cook all the time, but I am lucky because I happen to like things that are healthy. I love grilled fish with all kinds of interesting sauces on it. And I, love grilled vegetables. So part of it is having the fun of discovering foods that maybe were not on your meal plan that you actually might like.
So I can tell you personally, because I am friends with Lauren, that number one, she is an excellent cook, and I have had her grilled chickens and grilled salmons. I'm a slow adopter to eating seafood, but I'm getting way better at it now, and her grilled vegetables. And I can also,
the last time we went out to dinner, you ordered fish. Floored.
I know. My mom never cooked fish for us growing up because my dad didn't like the smell of it. So my brother and I are really kind of amateur seafood eaters, but, the other thing that you might not know about Lauren is where she practices medicine. If I'm not mistaken, my friend, there is a huge donut shop right in the entry lobby of where you work at Northwestern Hospital.
Oh, it's much worse than that. There's not only a Stan's donut in the lobby.
In the building, lobby.
In the actual building. God. I pass it every day. There is a Mandy B's, which is a bakery.
Sweet Mandy B's.
I don't know if it's just a Chicago favorite bakery, but it is like amazing, amazing desserts and frosting.
The best.
And then there's another donut shop about half a block away. It's like we are in Donut Central. I once said to someone, is this like the cardiovascular doctors trying to get more patients and just, investing in donut shops all over the hospital? It is a weird thing. But yes, it is in my building. And I actually don't even think about it, quite honestly. I walk right past it every day. I've never gone in. It's not on my radar. I don't go through the should I or shouldn't I, because I never have. But I think part of that also is by the time I get to work, I've had breakfast. I think it would be different if I walked in the door starving.
Yeah.
And I smelled those donuts and I thought, oh, but because I walk in the door and I'm truly not hungry.
Yeah.
I don't think about it.
I love that. And for those of you who might be, you get hungry in the day and you might want to stop off and pick up the McDonald's or the Stan's Donuts or the Sweet Mandy B's. Something I've taken to in this last year is I keep a bag of salted almonds in my purse for those desperate moments, and always some sparkling water. So I'll try the sparkling water first, wait 15 minutes. If that doesn't work, then the salted almonds are coming. And I know, don't judge. It's salted almonds. Should I be eating the salted almonds? Probably plain, but you know what? It just feels a little more
decadent. It's not like you're having a whole bag of them.
No, like five.
Five is fine. Pretty much anything in moderation
is good for you. So,
that's the other thing too. It's about portion control. When you look at something that is uniquely American, we eat enormous proportions. And if you spend any time in other countries, whether it's South America or Europe, you will find when you go to a restaurant that the portions are going to be dramatically smaller. And I'm never hungry.
You're never, and you don't gain weight.
No, we eat more slowly. Over. The portions are smaller. It's the portion control is a huge issue because a lot of people have this idea, well, I'm eating healthy. I don't know why I keep gaining weight. And it's because if you eat enough of anything, even if it is healthy, I mean, calories in, calories out. We know that's the case.
Right. Exactly. I love going to Italy and having two gelatos and wine. And for some reason, it's like my magical place on earth. You don't gain weight there. So I recommend if you're thinking about a trip to Italy, go there because you just won't gain weight.
There's another reason you don't gain weight in Italy other than that, you know, they have good portions and you're walking, but you're not eating processed foods.
Yes.
It's the processed foods are the devil. And when you are in Italy, although I think they do have some of these chain restaurants popping up, but in general, you are not eating processed foods. And if it's a food that your grandmother would not have served, you probably shouldn't be eating it. Now we have to say great-grandmother because processed foods have been around for a long time. But that's a big problem, and you do not see it in Europe. And in fact, as more of these fast food restaurants and processed foods are getting into the cultures of these other countries, we are seeing obesity in other countries as well, in places where it used to not exist.
Right. So try to eat whole foods as much as you can, right? Like if, you know, eat what, you know, God grew on earth, yeah. Essentially.
Yeah, but one of the problems also, and, you know, and just trying to be realistic about this, is we know that there are a lot of food deserts. And particularly, we are lucky, you and I, to live in an area where there's a lot of grocery stores. I think I'm in walking distance of three really good grocery stores and farm stands. We have a farmer's market a couple times a week. Many, many people live in areas where truly it does not exist. They are surrounded by liquor stores. They're surrounded by fast food stores. And especially for women who are busy and are working and are taking care of a family, they do not have the time. I mean, my heart goes out to them. You can have all the good intentions in the world. They do not have the time to travel to a grocery store 30 or 40 minutes away to get that food to take home to make for themselves and for their family. So they start to rely on the fast food, which is, you know, there and inexpensive, and it does the job. But that's one of the reasons, you know, why we have a lot of problems with weight control in our country.
Yeah, no, I'm a mom of two teenagers all over the place and all the time. So I can certainly sympathize with just being busy and someone's hungry an hour later. And then the first one's hungry again 2 hours later. So your car's stopping in all sorts of places. Well, Lauren, is there any other, you know, last things that you want to tell us about weight and how we can, you know, get rid of it, be healthy. Yeah.
I think that the word of caution that I would give everybody is there's so many fad diets out there, the nothing but grapefruit diet and the eat, you know, things that only start with the letter L diet and all this. And the problem with these diets is that they're not sustainable. And when you go on a diet, you're not going on a diet that I'm going to go on a diet and lose the weight and go off the diet because you'll gain the weight right back. I think in terms of changing the way you eat, changing the way you think about food. And again, you should never starve yourself. There's no reason to be hungry. It's about enjoying food and celebrating food with the people you love and the people you want to be with or cooking for yourself. It doesn't matter. Food should be a positive thing, not a negative thing. There's too much self-loathing. There's too much self-criticism. Let's think in terms of eating healthy, taking good care of our bodies, which in turn will take care of our minds, our confidence, our energy levels. It all comes together.
Well, this was amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your gems with us. And I know we will have you back and soon.
Anytime. And then we'll talk more about those bedroom deal breakers, right?
Oh my God. And how to have a better orgasm. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I have lots of tips for that.
Oh, all right. We're definitely going to have you back soon. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love, follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.